I've got a straight talking woman. She's gonna give it to you straight. I got a straight talking woman. She's gonna give it to you straight. She'll tell it how it is, and she means every word she says. Some lie that women aren't opinionated, but impartial. It's small, complicated, but a straight talking woman to kinda understand. But about no bush now, she let you know just where you stand. All right, Andre. No sharpened tongue. She tells it how it is. She gets the job done. A straight talking woman. She knows just where it's at. Oh yeah. She found a corner. You wanna get the best that you got. Oh yeah. I got a straight talking woman. I got a straight talking woman. Straight talking woman. I got a straight talking woman. She tells her how it is, that she means every word she says.
How good is that? Straight Talking Woman, taken from the album Home, when it means we welcome back Angie Lister and the band. It's been 7 long years since you were here last.
Yeah, it's quite a while. I think, yeah, the last time I came was with the Blues Caravan in 2006.
So, that's right.
Yes.
Younger and fresh-faced then.
Yeah, a bit old and weary now, yeah.
Now, that was during your time with Roof Records. You had about 9 years with them, roughly, was it, altogether?
I was getting on for 10.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And what, 7 or 8 albums with them, I guess?
6 or 7, I think.
Including my favourite ever live album, until Super Kevin Pilchards came out. Live at Leeds was my favourite album, and then Super Kevin Pilchards for me just knocked me out. It was just a fine album. But so that's what, about 11 years old now, isn't it, or thereabouts?
That's 2001.
Oh, right, so, yeah, even older, yes.
Yeah, quite old.
And during that time, during the Blues Caravan thing, you were very busy, lots of big festivals, lots of touring across Europe, all that kind of thing. And then it seemed to me, tell me if I'm wrong, that it went a bit quiet then in the last, what, 2 or 3 years? Did it go quiet?
No, not at all, no. I've always been busy. never as busy as I've been in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I left Ruff and I signed to Manhattan Records in 2009-ish. I did two albums with them. And they did really well. Mm. I think there's been periods of my career where there's certain areas of the country where I've not visited for a few years. And some of the people that come to the gigs will travel and some people won't. So, you know, if you're playing local, then they'll come along. And if you don't play in their town or their area for 3 or 4 years, they just, you're not around.
He's
gone. Yeah, but it's just different. We sort of tend to mix it up in terms of where we play.
Then the album Home comes out this year.
It came out on 8th of July.
I think some of us had a copy a little bit earlier than that, didn't we? But you were also gigging it, weren't you? Because I saw at Hebden Bridge you were doing tracks on the album, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, we were road testing at least half the album for about a year or so before we actually went in to record it, because I'd always had a thing where, certainly on Equilibrium, which was the last studio album, and that was in 2009, I wrote the tracks in the 3 or 4 months leading up, so of course you go in and record and it's all fresh and you've not tried it out on the road and you record it as you see fit at the time, but of course you take it out and tour it and you know inevitably it all changes and gets better. So
yes.
I thought, well, no, I need to do it the other way around. I need to get the songs to the optimum level and, you know, experiment with them, try them out, see how the audience react to them, see how they go down, and then go into the studio.
Did it change much then in that period of sort of gigging it and road?
I think they just matured.
Yeah,
and I think the band's we just got used to playing them, really. And, you know, you start to, once you get to know a song, you start to sort of mess around with it a bit and have a bit of fun with it. And going into the studio where you've basically tried all the different variables, you know what's really going to sound good and what's going to sound just okay. So definitely road testing stuff was a really, really good idea.
You mentioned the word fun there, and I saw you over 3 days at Hebden Bridge, and you had fun.
Yeah, Hebden Bridge was great, actually.
Yeah,
really good.
Yes, I mean, keeping. I mean, you're on stage every night, just about. I mean, you were there on the first night. You were the opening night.
Yeah,
and thereafter, whereas other bands came and went and disappeared and took their gig fee and disappeared, you stayed there and were gigging every night of the whole festival. It was great to see you.
We played our set, as you were, on the Friday night, and then I don't normally stick around at festivals, and they just invited us to stick around, and so I thought, well, yeah, you know, I'll check out some of the other bands. And there's quite a few people I'd heard the names, but I'd never seen them, so it was good to sort of socialise and just relax a bit, really. And I turned into a bit of a jam whore. I was just up jamming with everyone, and because I was around, everybody kept saying, oh, do you want to get up and play? And do you want to get up and play? And I was like going from pillar to post, and I think I jammed with about 50% of the bands that played there. Amazing fun, really, really good weekend.
And there were so many of other bands which are so pleased. Oh, I play with Angel. Angel's been on stage with us, you know. And I mean, it was a win-win for everybody, I guess.
Yeah, you know? It was just a really, really good weekend. Met lots of people who I've probably bumped into once or twice, but I've never actually seen them play or I've heard the name. And you kind of say hi, but you never stick around because either they've got another show to do or you have. But no, it was good. Really, really good.
We'll go back to Home and its tracks on it and lots of other things. After your next number, what are you going to do next?
Next, I think we will do track 4, which is a song a bit different from the last one. Serve it up anyway.
our fingers and our sugar any time of the day. The way you move your hips, baby, the way you shake that thing with your cherry flavor lips and your marzipan skin. I get so hooked on your sugar, baby, I can't keep my craving in.
Another track taken from the album Home. The album is, to me, when I first started, when it arrived on the post and I looked at it, the first thing that struck me was the shortness of the titles. Almost all one-word titles.
Yeah, do you know what? You're not the first person to point that out, actually.
Yeah, I guess not. Was there any reason behind it, or just pure
coincidence? No, it's just the way it went, really. Just right. They're all just short one-liners, you know, just one word, just one-word titles. So.
And written, all the tracks you wrote, written over what period of time?
Start to finish, getting on for 2 years.
Mm.
That's not, you know, 2 years. That's not, you know,
I know. Yes.
700 days of basically every day, I'm going to write a song today. It was just, I wrote when I felt the urge. If I had an idea, something inspired me. I wrote quite a lot of stuff that didn't make it, you know, where I'd mess around with it for a while. And mm-hmm. I've got a kind of a limit where I'll stick with something for so long. And after 10 times of retrying different bits, and I said, I know, I kind of just move on. And sometimes, you know...
Forever, or do you put it back in the shot locker for some stage,
no,
perhaps,
I mean,
in the future?
No, I mean, you know, there's songs, there's ideas. I've got probably hundreds of ideas where they're just like bits of songs, which I might use them at a later point. I mean, there's a song on Equilibrium that I called What's It All About? And the actual chorus line for that, I wrote 12 years ago. but the rest of the song... that it came from didn't work. It was basically just got put on the back burner. And then I was writing What's It All About, and I came up with like the chords for the verse, and I thought, I need some kind of a chorus. And then I just remember, I thought, oh, that'll work. So it was basically an idea I'd written like, you know, 8-9 years previous, and I just picked it out and placed it in. So so the, you know, the stuff that didn't get used, yeah, it will be used at some point, I'm sure. But yeah, I just steadily, just over a couple of years, really. I didn't want to rush it. I wanted to kind of, you know, just do it when I was ready and I actually had something to write.
Two tracks on the album not written by yourself, including one by Anthony Newley, which is took me by surprise.
Feeling Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I heard the Nina Simone version first.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always been aware of the song,
mm-hmm.
but we'd been doing Purple Rain for quite a while, which has become a bit of a fan's favourite, and we do at gigs. And there's a couple of gigs where we didn't do it and just about got, you know, lynched at the end of the show. So, well, you know, we better... we better do it, you know. And I still love doing it. I thought, well, it's probably due for a replacement at some point. So I thought, yes. I don't want to like burn out with this. But so Feeling Good was like, I thought, well, yeah, it's a kind of song where I can do something with it. I can kind of do the, you know, the dynamic, the
yes.
quiet guitar in the verses, and then, you know, in the middle and that sort of thing. Mm. And we just tried that, and I was only aware of the Nina Simone version. It wasn't until we actually started playing it live that something goes, hey, you're doing that Joe Bonamassa song, aren't you? I said, which Joe Bonamassa? I don't know any Joe Bonamassa song. I said, is that that song, third in, Feeling Good, Joe Bonamassa? I said, all right. I said, does he do it then? And then I went to check it out, yes. but everybody assumed it was his song. I
yes.
said, no, I said, actually,
it goes back a bit further.
I mean,
that,
I know
yeah.
Nina Simone, obviously, I don't think she didn't write it. But
no, she, written by Rickerson and Newley, I guess.
Yeah. And then obviously Muse did it. So
yes.
at the point when I decided to do it in a live set, about three or four established people were already doing it. I thought, oh. But, you know, the version we decided to go with is, you know, decidedly different.
Yes.
He's obviously got this one on, doing a bit of piano on
yeah.
it, which just happened one night and we kept it in. So I thought, well, let's put it on the album, you know,
yeah.
why not?
You mentioned Purple Rain. Has it become yeah. like your John Martin, May You Never Albatross Around Your Neck thing, or do you still okay with it?
No, I still enjoy it. I still really enjoy playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those songs where the reason I started playing it initially is because it's a really nice chord sequence to play over.
Yes.
And I thought, I want a bit of a, for want of a better word, a bit of a vehicle to kind of do my thing, you know, because a lot of my songs are quite arranged and stuff, and I don't do sort of slow blues anymore. And I probably should, you know, but I thought, well, I've never done straight blues. And so for that, that's like my slow blues, if you like,
yeah.
where I get to play the intricate guitar thing in the middle and turn the volume down and the pin drop moment and all
yes.
that sort of stuff. So, but yeah, I still enjoy it. Yeah, I do.
But it's got a checkered career on YouTube, hasn't it? Because it keeps having to be taken down or something. Have you
unfortunately, it does. Prince's people are quite hot on that. I mean, they left it up for a couple of years. And apparently, I mean, I don't know this for absolute fact, but he's heard my version of it.
And likes it.
He actually likes it.
Yeah.
He thinks it's quite cool. So it was the version that we've got, or we did have on Glastonbury, on YouTube that we played at Glastonbury.
Yeah.
Been on for 3 years, and suddenly it just got taken down a few weeks ago. And so they were well aware of it. I think
yes.
it just reaches a certain amount of views, and then they're like,
once
you've had it now, mate.
10,000 views, bang, it's gone.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah, yeah. yeah.
Okay, where to next on the album?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do Broke, track number 2. Everybody talks about what the future holds. And the papers and on the TV, news on the radio. And the state we're in, hard to know who we're heading for. Still we say we're trying, 'cause there's nothing left anymore. Money's getting harder now to make it. Nobody gonna bother let it go. It has to be what you ever got to take it. Everybody wanna know, where did the money go? When a million shattered pieces is all that remains. I've a system and I've a too much we can never sustain. Some out there losing everything, they got nowhere to go. And the ones that saw it coming just don't wanna know. Left.
it has to be what you have got to take it. Everybody wanna know, where did the money go?
Track two off the album, or was it track four off the album, Broke?
Broke, yes, track two.
Track
yeah.
two. Yeah. Now, you've mentioned, each time you've introduced the tracks, you've mentioned the track number,
yeah.
Which, for an old fart like me, makes some sense. But did you actually plan the album that way, with an opening track and you know, sort of side one and side two kind of stuff? Or
kind of, yeah. To be honest with you, getting the running order for the album right is always a bit of a challenge, because...
Yes.
You know, depending on if you've got a good mixture of tracks, the idea is that, you know, you want the album to kind of, you don't want it to have loads of really good stuff and then loads of really not so good stuff. Of course, all the stuff on Home is fantastic. but no, you want it to basically, I mean, with the running order for this album, the first part of the album is quite, I mean, the first track is quite, it's quite a serious track. It's in a minor key for a start. And then obviously you want something a bit light afterwards, which is the one we just played, Broke. And then there's a couple of sort of darker songs. And then, of course, by the time we get to track five or six and you've had quite a few dark songs, you want something that's just a bit almost... It's a bit lighthearted. So then we did Sugar, which is obviously just a bit of fun. And, you know, so, yeah, I think it's... But it's very hard to get it right.
Do you still think it's relevant in this day of iPod shuffles and the like and people buying individual tracks?
I do, because... A big proportion of my sort of people, basically fan base, the people that buy the albums, they're of the older generations.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot more younger people now that are into my stuff than there used to be. Because I think I've kind of, you know, it's a bit more accessible than it used to be. I used to be kind of just very sort of blues rock, whereas now, I mean, Home's probably a good example of what I'd call... You know, it's got, there's a bit of something on there for everyone. You know, there's some bluesier tracks, there's some poppier ones, like, you know, Broke's a bit more sort of radio or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit on there for everyone. So the audience now that comes to the gigs, there's male and female, which never used to happen.
And they're under 50.
Yeah, yes. And, you know, from ages, you know, like 16 to 69 or whatever. You know, and even older.
Or even older,
know,
yes.
You know, 70, 71, all of them, you know, really. She's all getting a bit...
You don't go above 71, obviously.
Random, isn't it? But yeah, basically, yeah, I think having, going back to what you were saying, having a running order on an album, I think people still listen to them as albums, certainly the older people. Maybe the younger generations are more into like the iPods. They'll just download certain tracks, or they'll just put certain tracks onto their iPod that they like.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I just like my dad, he'll still listen to albums from start to finish, so...
But you think of them, obviously you don't think of it in A side and B side though, side one, side two, do you?
Well, kind of before my time, really.
So yeah, I was gonna say.
I've only ever really known CDs, but
yes.
But yeah, it's there's definitely quite a bit of time. Well, I won't say time, but it's definitely a bit of a challenge sometimes. You've basically got this bunch of tracks to think, right, what on earth, which order do we put them in? Which is, I mean, there's no right or wrong, it's all subjective, and you just do what you think is right, you know. And hopefully the people that listen to it agree.
When you went in the studio to make Home, you had an obvious idea of how it was going to sound, how it was going to be. The finished product, was it exactly like that, or did it change a bit or a lot?
I'll be completely honest with you. This is the first album I've ever done where it came out exactly how I envisaged it, how I was imagining it.
Yeah.
I'd kind of planned it in my head for quite a while before we went in. I had certain criteria, if you like, that I wanted in terms of the actual songs that are on the album. I wanted the material to work on an album so it's interesting to listen to and it's varied and it's not all the same thing. But I also wanted those songs to be able to be played live and work on an album in the studio. And because it's, I mean, sometimes, you know, I've recorded stuff in the studio and they stay as studio tracks very much. It's a studio album, and then you try and play them live and either they don't quite work as well live, or there's not much you can do with them. You know, the arrangement or the version on the album is kind of, well, that's what you've got, really. There's not much leeway. Whereas with all these songs, because we tried a good sort of half of the album out live anyway in the year leading up to the studio time, I knew they'd work anyway. So all the songs, I kind of wrote them with the musician side of it in mind, because we all we're all musicians.
Yes.
And we all love playing, and you know, it's nice to have a bit of just a bit of movement where, you know, you can inject a bit of your own personality into it. And
I mean, there's already movement I can sense with Broker for a start, the one you just played. I mean, I could see hear a change in that from the album version, and so there should be.
Yeah, but I think with this album, it was, in terms of, you know, did it come out how I wanted it to? It did, and I've never had that before. There's always been something where you know, the mix is not right or the songs don't quite come together in the way you want. But with this one, I think because I did really kind of take my time with it, and I think people were getting a bit out of patience. You know, I've been talking about this album for, you know, a couple of years.
Yes,
is it done yet? Is it done? Are you in this, you know?
It was, what, 2.5, 3 years between Equilibrium and that one, was it?
Four.
Ooh, right, yeah. Yes.
But it's like all these things, you know, I just kept saying, well, you know, these things take time. And I'm glad I did take my time with it. I mean, I'm not going to leave it that long until the next one.
That was my next question, yes.
But I think for this one as well, with it being my 10th album, I think there was quite a lot of anticipation from people saying, right, you know, can you, you know, have you got anything left to give? And and the other thing was as well that with this album, we released it in-house on our own label.
Yes.
Because I've been with Ruff for nearly 10 years. I was in Manhattan Records for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then we decided to take the whole thing in-house. So again, the name Home has got various, yes, different meanings.
Was that a risky step, a brave step to do?
It's one of those things, isn't it? You just think, well, what's the worst that can happen? You know, yes, it doesn't quite work out.
Yes.
And then you just go back to what you're doing before. But you think, well, you only live once. I've been doing it for 15 years now. Yes. And think, well, if the opportunity is there to do it, then why not?
Yeah.
So, and I'm lucky that I've got an amazing partner, Steph, who she loves and thrives in all the kind of the business and setup of the record label and all that kind of, you know, clever stuff. Yes. And I do the music, and I, you know, when it comes to like email, I'm terrible at answering email. I can't even text my friends back when they text me, so I've got no hope at setting a record label up. But she's really good with that, and yeah, that's kind of her side of the business, and I do the music, and we brought the management in house two, yes, years ago. 2.5 years ago, I think it was. And then the next stage was the record label. Mm. And it was, yeah, it's a risk, but I think you have to take risks. And you look at the worst case scenario and you think, well, what is the worst thing that can happen? Mm. We think, well, it doesn't work. And you just go back to what you were doing before.
It's also happening more and more. I think the, yeah, internet, social media, I think, allows these things to be far more organic and grow as well. So I think, I mean, it's
absolutely
exactly the right thing to do, yeah.
I think the thing is as well, that, like you say, with the internet, the way it is, there's so much, you know, facility to basically put your music out on your own.
Mm.
And because I've been going for a few years, so I've kind of, you know, I've built up a bit of a, you know, a bit of a following, you know, on
yes,
on the World Wide Web. So so we basically just made sure we just covered all the bases of what's been covered in the past, and so far so good.
Talking of the World Wide Web, if people want to find out more, your website is at
it's Ainsley Lister. .co.uk. And we've got a Facebook page and Twitter and all that business as well. Because everyone's got that, haven't they?
Which you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually on there. Yeah. I do actually talk
actively
to people.
Typing and
yeah, yeah, I'm actually, I normally get back to people if I'm not, like, you know, changing my pickups or looking at some new kind of guitar strings or whatever. That does tend to consume half my life.
Yes. So easy to get sidetracked.
Yeah, yeah.
Wander down rabbit holes and get lost forever. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What are you going to finish with?
We're going to finish with probably one of my favourites on the album. This is a song called Hyde 2612.
Oh, yes.
And this is...
It's not just your favourite, though, is it? It's a favourite of many.
Well, this was a bit of a curveball. Because this was one that we didn't try live. And I wrote it. I had the idea for... Basically, I got into the TV series Life on Mars,
yes,
a few years ago. And I got so into it, and the dialogue and the characters, and I thought that there's so much colourful language in there, and just funny and quirky, you know, the whole 1973 thing. So I thought it'd be quite cool to write a song, you know, yeah, all about that. And I had a couple of goes, and the first version of it was completely different lyrics and everything, and that got kind of put on the back burner. And then I started again, and I kind of got it where I wanted it. And I think because people had not heard it previously, it was obviously a surprise on the album because we'd not road tested it.
Yes.
I think a lot of people thought, what on earth is this song about? And I think quite a few people have listened to the lyrics and thought, yeah, I get this. I know what it's about. There's a few clues in there.
Yes.
But if you've not seen the series, it's just this weird song.
The odd thing is that your album was the album of the month in the Independent Blues Broadcasters Association last month.
Right.
So 26 DJs across the UK all had that, played a track every week from home, you see.
Right.
And I, for the first time, started to collate the album charts for these blues broadcasters, because I said, well, come on, if you're doing a playlist, you can send me the playlist and I'll collate the album charts. Mm. Now, it's obviously you were number one because you were the album of the month. Buddy Guy was second, Dana Fuchs third, and so on. But because they sent me their track listings, I was able to see what they all played.
Oh, right, okay.
And on that first week of the album of the month for July, of Home, I think of the 26 DJs, I think seven chose as their first track High 2612.
That's
which
really
is
cool.
Really odd, you know, in a sense, because you're saying, I mean, it's not the most immediate track either, but it's the one which I think many of us went for straight away, which is...
Yeah, it's just a bit odd, I suppose. But it just, I wanted to just do the make it a bit quirky. And
yeah,
so... Again, it's another one that we, obviously, we're about to do it live now, but it's great fun. So here we go. This is Hyde 2612.
Well, I'm not feeling quite myself. Something's gone out of sync. There's a cog inside my head and he's relocating and sliding in. It all looks a little strange, like I've been here before. But things are not in place. Somebody moved the door. Who is this man in front of me? His name with nicotine. He claims he's my superior in 1973. Only our policing ain't doing it by the book. Settling most endeavors with a healthy right hook. For him, the word compassion's not in his vocabulary. Trying to get me back, don't go all Dorothy on me. Wake, wake up to another day with the sheriff. Come on now, wake, wake up. Wake up and smell the cocoa, I'm still here. I guess I ain't going home today. Spinning round the streets, heavy on the brakes. Bribes, plants, and evidence to clear the scum away. Bets on a party seven, fighting for my pride. The only way to show him that I'm right this time. Done and dusted by tea time, here's God paving the way. Another out the street, another collar poured away. Come on now, wake, wake up to another day with the sheriff. Trying to show me the way. Come on now, wake, wake up and smell the cocoa. I'm still here. I guess I ain't going home today.